Sometimes gardening can be a serious business if we're dealing with a drought like last year, or maybe battling pests or disease or plants that just won't cooperate. Not as much fun as you might like. Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. But no one brings out the lighter side of gardening better than the Vicars of Vegetables. Erwin Goldman and Jim Nienhuis are horticulture professors at UW-Madison. And they know a lot about all kinds of garden plants and growing conditions. They're also passionate about garden haikus. Want to inspire you to express yourself in verse. Jim Nienhuis, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Well, my pleasure as well.
And Erwin Goldman, great to see you again.
Thanks for having us back, Larry.
Oh, it's really great to have you back. Some listeners might not know that about your penchant for garden-inspired poetry. How did that actually start?
I don't know. It was just a bad day in the office, wasn't it? We were sort of, I think there were some tears, and we thought, what can we do to lighten things up? I don't remember when.
It was, I think you're right, and I think you found the haiku format, you know, the 5-7-5 simple format of the haiku to be therapeutic, really, when you encounter the things you encounter in gardening. I think you found that to be therapy.
Because you know, there's some suffering involved. Yeah. You know, there's all about because it's like a love affair with the earth. You know, because there's those moments of great passion and reward, and then there are moments of pain
and loss.
And yes. So it's all there, really. I think it just sets it up for a poetic approach to gardening.
And we've had some fantastic haikus, even from listeners here.
Yeah, and Jim, I know you wanted to read one of your favorite poems. It's not a haiku; but it's a poem.
Oh, you mean the
Pablo? Oh, yeah. Neruda's
well,
Ode to the Onion.
Because Erwin is, after all, I mean, Mr. Onion, and I found Pablo Neruda's Ode to the Onion. Now, the kids, my kids, tell me that when I speak Spanish, they say that I sound exactly like Pablo Neruda, which is probably why he's not recorded well. But let me I'll just start, and then I'll turn it over to Erwin. Now, here's Pablo. I could also do this with a George Bush accent. But
do Pablo.
Let's do Pablo. Okay. Bajo la tierra fue el milagro, y cuando apareció tu torpe tallo verde, y nacieron tus hojas como espadas en el huerto. That's Pablo. That's Pablo speaking through me, Erwin. Now, take over.
So this is a poem called Ode to the Onion, and many of you will know that Pablo Neruda is a very famous Chilean poet who actually won the Nobel Prize.
Romantic.
Yeah.
Incredibly romantic.
Yeah, so a brilliant poet. And he wrote a series of odes about gardening and about vegetables and foods. This one is called Ode to the Onion, and the stanza that Jim just read would be translated as follows. Under the earth, the miracle happened, and when your clumsy green stem appeared, and your leaves were born like swords in the garden, the earth heaped up her power, showing your naked transparency, and as the remote sea in lifting the breasts of Aphrodite.
Wow.
Now that is quite a stanza.
You know, I don't know why I chose that, Erwin, but there was something about the swords in your garden. And then, of course, you know, the breasts of Aphrodite. I thought, those are what I'm always thinking about when I'm in my onion garden. I don't know.
Well, the image of leaves were born like swords in the garden is a beautiful image.
There's another great line at the bottom of this one.
You want to read that in Spanish?
Nos hiciste llorar sin afligirnos y cuando existe celebre cebolla, pero para mí eres.
And what Neruda is saying there is, you make us cry without hurting us. I have praised everything that exists, but to me, onion, you are more beautiful than a bird of dazzling feathers.
Wow.
So,
finish that one
up. Oh, yeah. He says, you are more beautiful than a bird of dazzling feathers, heavenly globe, platinum goblet, unmoving dance.
Larry, excuse me. I just have to excuse myself. and you know, that's a wonderful poem.
It really is.
And we have some great haikus from our colleagues from around the state to share. And there was, because it was onions, I thought, Cynthia Schuster.
Oh, yeah.
had a haiku, again, 5, 7, and 5.
I can read that one for you.
Yeah, read that one.
I squish my onions. My squash and eggplant won't grow. There's always next year. Doesn't that...
Yeah, it really...
I have a mental image of that. That is exactly what gardening is.
Yeah, it's...
Cynthia captured that.
She did. That, yeah. I mean, it speaks to the hopefulness that's really required to be involved.
And, you know,
in
the challenge, right? That some years, you know, your onions will work, and some years your squash and onions, you know, your eggplants won't. Thank God the eggplant won't work. because I would actually look for a climate in which they would never grow. But...
Well, Al Ross from the Eau Claire Bureau said, "There on my hands rest two regular-looking thumbs. I wish they were green."
Oh, that's spectacular.
Al, oh, my gosh. Oh. So those are a couple of great ones from, and, you know, we can probably, Dave Potratz came up with a really nice one. That I thought,
oh, yes.
Radishes.
Quicker than I thought, breaking through the soil, my window box radishes. You know, yeah. Dave, you hit mm-hmm. it. You mm-hmm. hit it.
I had a sandwich the other day, yesterday, as a matter
is
of fact.
Is this a haiku? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I had a sandwich the other day.
Because I was going to say, that doesn't start off with five. I had a sandwich the other day. That's too many.
I sliced up some radishes. I sliced a cucumber. I sliced some onion. I got some pepper jack cheese. Mm. I had a little arugula, and I put that on some rye bread. Mm. And then I had a kind of a spicy little mayonnaise type mm-hmm. thing to put over it. And it was really good.
Those isn't that
crunchy
the
radishes.
Those are exactly the ingredients in the Big Mac. You know, I don't think a lot of people don't realize that. You know, the arugula is a McDonald's product. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like a fantastic sandwich.
It was a great sandwich, and you know what? You know, this is the time where
no kidding, yeah,
we're celebrating the fruits of our garden.
That's right.
Man, we're gonna have, you know, we've got 2 months of, you know, pickles and peppers and tomatoes, and how can a sandwich not taste good this time of the year in Madison, Wisconsin, or anywhere in Wisconsin for that matter?
We had a Facebook question from Chris, who says, I have a question. He's in Superior. We had a cold spring in Superior. My Jersey Wakefield cabbages did not form heads, just stalks. What's going on? What do you think's going on there?
Boy, I would have expected just the opposite.
When he says stalks, does he mean that they bolted, that they flowered?
It just said just long stalks.
I'm assuming that's what Chris means, is that what happened is the plants were induced to flower.
Oh, you think they were vernalized?
Yeah, they bolted because of the cold. I'm assuming if he had a long stalk, maybe he means they went to seed. Do you think that's what he means?
Oh,
there?
I bet you. I bet anything.
Yeah. You nailed it, Erwin. That's exactly right.
So for those listeners out there who are familiar with this phenomenon, the cabbage... is one of those plants that will flower after cold induction. And that's called vernalization. And sometimes in a cold climate, when you plant those seedlings, they'll get cold-induced as seedlings, and then they'll bolt. They'll go to seed.
Well, perfect answer. Marguerite in Madison had a question, too. She wants to start an asparagus patch and wonders what she needs to do to be successful. Would now be a time to start it? I think it... Probably spring is the more traditional time.
Well, I think you can plant it any time during the summer. Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to let it, I would say plant it and then come back several years later.
That's
and
right.
Just leave it alone. I mean, you can apply, I mean, there are like these death chemicals that you can apply, these herbicides to prevent the grass. But asparagus appears to be able to outcompete that pretty well. So I would say go get some good. I don't think they're probably available any longer.
No, that's the problem.
Yeah, wait till spring.
So you probably have to wait till next year. But I would say plant over in a quiet corner where no. The other important thing is that no one should mow it. This happened to my brother. Mm-hmm. Every time that, you know, that they would flower, and his wife would mow over that area and remove those ugly, you know, fronds with the little yet red berries.
The real feathery.
And I
thing,
thought, yeah. you know, this is not, you got to have the, you got to, the whole idea is store the photosynthate right. down there in the root, and then you'll have some asparagus in the spring. So you got to remember not to mow it off.
Well, all right. And I would say, and in, because. Mm-hmm. You're saying spring because that's when we can get the the material, the not seeds. You don't start from seeds.
Transplants.
Right. We have a haiku from a listener, Robin Plymouth, who says, "Fussy hydrangea, I want it to be blue. How much coffee grounds?"
That's great. Very good. Very good.
Oh, and Dan in La Crosse is on board here. Dan, hi.
Hi. I have a little song and a follow-up, if I could.
Okay.
There's a beautiful old hymn called In the Garden, and it's just a touching, tender hymn, and I've written a new chorus to it.
Oh, boy.
It goes like this. And the weeds are strong and their roots are long, but he shows me how to pull. Now the soil is clean and the leaves are green. The blossoms are coming full. And if I could mention it, I'll be performing at the Acoustic Buffet in Winona from 8 to 10 p.m. tonight.
Oh, that's great.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you so much. And where are you performing? You really are performing?
Yes, I am. Acoustic Cafe at 2nd at Lafayette in Winona, Minnesota. 8 to 10 p.m. tonight.
Dan, thank you.
Fantastic.
Appreciate it very much.
And Irwin,
isn't that a nice?
We can make that, can't we? Is he inviting us
we
to that
We could open
gig?
For him.
Yeah, we could open. Yeah, it's not a problem.
Oh, my gosh. Here's a Lori in Hale's Corners up next. Lori, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, gentlemen. I also do a bean dance.
A bean dance.
I can't do that on the radio, but
no,
I do go
no. But if you can capture, if we can capture a mental image of that bean dance through a haiku, that would be appropriate.
Well, you kick up your heels and then you wave your arms up into the air, you know, in a wavy motion, like a bean growing straight up, crooked up. Okay, here comes the tongue twister. My grandson and I. We're helping a woman to remove thistles from her garden. And on our way home, he composed the first line. I composed the rest to explain it. So, water trickles down the fickle thistle with prickles. That's Joshua's. And then I say, why fickle? 'Cause to thrive, the thistle must hide a bit, then grow real quick. She hides, then grows a lot. So grows the fickle thistle, a heck of a hassle for those whose gardens they speckle.
The fickle thistle.
Oh, yeah. Lord. And you did it without
that was
messing
impressive.
Up.
And you were driving at the time? Wow.
You should send that to me because I teach a broadcast class. And there are little sayings that we go through to help people with their diction, and that'd be a good one for my
the
students.
The fickle fiffle?
That'd be a good one for my students to work on.
Okay, sure.
Put it on my, post it or send it to me on, if you can do it on Facebook, or just go to talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org and email it to me.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Well, that was fun. Kate in Pewaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've been noticing that my zucchini plants keep blooming, but they don't set any fruit. And I was wondering if you have any suggestions, and then I have a haiku.
Oh, good. Okay, zucchinis are blooming or blossoming, but not setting fruit. Do the male flowers come out first?
They have to be pollinated, so I'm curious, you know, because we have a lot of zucchini out in the trial gardens this year, and you know the bees are working actively, and so it's not been part of our problem. I would suspect it's probably simply a pollination problem. Right. They have to be pollinated in order to set fruit.
Yeah.
So and their male flowers come first, don't they?
That's right.
And
yeah.
then the and so you may have all male flowers, but not the females yet.
That's right. Both of those could be.
Yeah, that's another option.
Oh, that's true. That's something. Yeah, you've got to look for, you know, the lady flowers are slightly different.
Yeah.
Yeah, the male flowers are thin and, you know, unnecessary. but I don't know why that is.
Yeah. So that's, but they're delicious.
Easily.
The flowers
but I do,
are delicious.
But I, that's one of my favorite things to make. In fact, we, for the last 3 weeks, we've been making the tempura squash flour. Which is beyond belief.
What's your recipe for that?
My recipe is, first of all, you have to get this flour. If you can do it with just, you know, it's absolutely Wisconsin. Eggs, beer, and flour.
Mm.
You know, it just couldn't be more. And you fill the flours with cheese.
Oh, even this, better.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Judith is shaking her head, agreeing with you 100%.
This is absolutely Wisconsin. So you harvest the flowers. The only problem is, of course, don't forget that the cucumber beetle, they sequester that terpenoid. Because cucurbits have this incredibly bitter terpenoid called cucurbitacin. And I gave this, one of my students was, you know, he was looking for the perfect date. And I not only give academic advice, but I provide a lot of dating advice as well to my students. You know, relationship advice is not unlocked. So I said, here's the deal. I said, a little chilled Chardonnay, not unlike the Chardonnay that we were provided here at the radio station. And I said, and make, you know, these tempura squash flowers. I said, you know, and this, you know, this woman will be she'll fall for you. There's no question about it. He makes this tempura squash flour. He forgets to check inside the flowers. And unfortunately, one of them had one of those cucumber beetles. And the reason that birds won't eat the cucumber beetles is because they sequester that compound.
That cucurbitacin.
Yeah, the cucurbitacin. And they're so bitter, even birds realize that, oh, my God, you know, these just are not, these insects are inedible. So apparently she bites into it, crushes the cucumber beetle inside, and
things went down.
Yeah, I won't go into any gruesome detail there, but wow. Apparently he did not come in with a big smile on his face on Monday morning. Anyway, but if you can wash them and check for the cucumber, and then you simply make up a, you know, kind of a beer batter, one of the things you can do is you can use rice flour, which is kind of a, I don't know, it creates kind of a unique texture, but you can use regular flour. It's a little bit cheaper. And you just dip them in. You stuff them with a little cheese. You dip them in and fry them. And, oh, my God, are they spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Oh, our Vicars of Vegetables, Erwin Goldman and Jim Nehan, who's our guest on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guests, the Vicars of Vegetables, UW Horticulture Professors Erwin Goldman and Jim Nieuwenhuis. Thanks to them for coming by. If you have a question, a gardening question, or maybe you've got a garden haiku, either case, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. In any event, we'd love to hear from you. And we were just talking about flowers. And Michael Tang, who is the husband of our Milwaukee regional manager, Lisa Nelbandian, sent us a haiku on flowers. A couple of them, actually. Flowers in the spring, tomatoes grow in summer. Don't eat the green ones. So that was tomatoes. And here's one more from him. Picking some flowers and some fruit from the garden. Oops, in the wrong yard.
Been there.
Oh, that's a good one. Thanks. And here's here's another one from, let's see, from Daniel. He calls it Better Boy. Please turn red. Please turn red. Please turn red. I planted late. Stupid frost.
These are, you know, but the objective of the haiku is to capture the mental image, right? And don't you just have a sense, Erwin, that there, can't you just see that? I envision it, yeah.
Absolutely. Here's another one that I think has a visual image.
Now, who's this from?
This is, I find, you know, sometimes I look on the web for vegetable poetry.
Oh.
And Jim and I think are both a little susceptible to that. And, you know, on a website where the people post their poetry, there's a short haiku from Ashley9597. Don't know who he or she is. But the haiku is, used 4-foot cages, tomatoes now 12 feet tall, might hook up tire swing. And, you know, everybody's had that experience.
We've right? been
With
there.
Tomatoes, you just have that image of them just growing. And it's just a
except for
that.
This year, which has not been. We don't have to go into the grim detail. We should focus on poetry and not talk about some of the grim details of this growing season.
My wife, who's in Orlando right now, had suggested a haiku that we ask listeners to have haikus inspired by small space gardening.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
She thought that'd be good. Why, mm-hmm. I don't know.
It'd be nice to hear that.
Yeah, it'd be nice to hear that. Tim in Kenosha is...
Have we had haikus focusing on large space gardening previously? I don't... didn't realize that.
Tim in Kenosha, hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you very much. This is a little bit longer than a haiku, but I just was inspired one day. I bought a hoe from the Yoho company.
Okay.
That kind of got us going. Anyway, here we go. Have you ever stopped at the garden shop for a bag of potting soil and ended up with a whole carload of things to ease your toil? You can't just buy a plain old hoe. Oh, no. Winged or weasel or one called yo. Tillers and killers and grinders and mowers. Garden carts, early starts, weed be gone and trellises long. The list goes on and on and on. The compost pile needs a dial to tell how hot. Thanks a lot. To start those seedlings off just right, a grow light bank with faux sunlight, and what about some magic mix to give those stubborn sprouts a fix? Those little plants will need a drink from sprinklers smart and valves that think. Who cares if those tomatoes poor are cost twice as much as in the store? A special shirt for in the dirt with khaki shorts and cotton gloves and flamingos pink and frogs of stone, gazebo plans. We'll need a loan. But cost is not the point. Oh, no. It's getting close to nature. Nature's call that keeps us in the flow. It matters not how much we spend. The cost is minor in the end. There is a need in dirt to toil. Our lives are rooted in the soil. We shall strive to keep our garden nice, regardless of the total price.
Wow.
That's very, very nice. Very nice, Tim.
We could translate that into Spanish and publish that under Neruda's name. I think there's a possibility. That I think Pablo would accept that, wouldn't he?
The garden style.
But, you know, you need a sword in there. And if you could have... I didn't hear about Aphrodite's breasts.
No breasts.
Okay.
You did have a question, though, Tim.
I did have a question.
Okay.
Yeah, my zucchinis... are blossoming, but the blossoms are falling off without fruit. What's happening?
You've not been listening to the show.
Well,
I think we had two possibilities. One is that they have male and female flowers, so it could be that the early flowers that you're seeing are in fact males. The other is that the fruit do require pollinization, and it could be that you don't have your little bugs out there, little insects, your honeybees or your bumblebees pollinating them.
I have 25 hives behind my squash.
Then I'm betting on male flowers.
Yeah.
Male flowers.
Yeah.
All right.
Or there's been a rebellion by the bees, and they're actually, they're refusing.
Maybe they're boycotting my garden.
Were they the earliest flowers that appeared that are falling off?
The ones right now.
Yeah, the ones right now.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Every flower I've got in my garden right now, they're all females right now, and we have squash, literally the size of a Volkswagen out there right now, and you can't just pick it; you have to roll them off the field, So this is not a problem that I'm experiencing.
Well,
it's hard for me to relate.
Before. Yeah. It's usually a competitive sport. You know, you take yours around the block. You take yours to the left, and that person takes their zucchini to the left.
Yeah, and generally, it takes two people to actually carry the zucchini out of the garden. So you know, it's just not a problem. I'm surprised to hear that people are experiencing this problem.
Well, maybe it's a good thing.
Right. Now, maybe it is. Thank you, Tim, for calling. Appreciate your call very much. We have Bill in Iron River up next. Bill, hello. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Good morning.
Morning.
I got a haiku for you about your favorite eggplant.
Oh boy.
This is based on an old lutefisk recipe, okay?
Eggplant and lutefisk. I don't, you know, there I have a mental image already.
Yeah.
Aren't they actually the same thing? Okay.
Well, you know, show your ear.
Okay, Phil. Okay.
Place eggplant on plank. Cook at 410, 1 hour. Toss eggplant. Eat plank.
You know, Bill, we're pretty sympathetic to that haiku, you know, because neither Irwin and I are great fans of the eggplant.
Something about the texture of that vegetable,
but there's mucus is the word that comes. I mean, any vegetable in which the most descriptive word that you can think of is mucus. Is, you know, there's an issue there, isn't there?
Well, one good thing about this recipe is if you overcook the plank, you know, it'll turn to charcoal and be easier to chew, too, you know.
And you'd only use that plank for, you know, for carbon, right? You wouldn't eat it.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I know. We're gonna get the phone calls from the
Eggplant Commission.
Yeah, these deranged eggplant lovers, you know.
Thank you, Bill. I want to go. We've got a... Oh, I just lost something that I was going to read here. Darn. Well, let's go back to the phones then, and to Doug in Menasha. Doug, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. I've got a haiku for you.
Cool.
All right.
Okay, it goes, greatest of all plants.
Greatest of all plants.
Purple, hue of royalty. Eggplant, we hail thee.
I don't like that.
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, but it didn't include the word mucus, you know, which we thought was critical to this haiku. We know that you're just trying to push the buttons here, aren't you? Aren't you, Doug?
Yeah, but I'm doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, you are.
Thanks for calling. Oh my goodness, I want to get a couple of more haikus in. We have now. Here's one. Norm Gilliland, our music and old-time radio host on our music network, and a wonderful chapter a day reader. He should be here to read this himself, to be honest.
I could do it for him. No,
go ahead and do it in your Pablo.
I was going to do it in the George Bush. No, I'm in my Pablo Neruda.
Yeah.
Summer. Well, I can't do it. I had to translate it, but I'll read it in English. Summer showers wane. Grass grows slowly without rain, so I mow no more. Norman Gilliland, you know, he does it. He captures the mental image, right? This is what great poetry is all about.
I agree.
And as long as we're on the sort of the lawn thing, Dean Kallenbach, our regional manager from Eau Claire, had, what's up with Charlie creeping all over my lawn? Well... at least it's green.
I like that very much.
At least it's green. Why is there such a problem with Charlie?
Mm-hmm.
And we have one more I have to read that I believe we've read everyone except John Munson's, regional manager from our superior bureau, who says, this was the first haiku I ever wrote, ever, in my life. Probably the last as well. By popular demand. So his is, rain, rain, sun, sun, sun. Sun, rain, 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 sun. So the gardens grow.
Yeah, John, you could use a little practice. Now, generally we'd like to have someone who has a little bit more haiku experience before we actually read them on the show. okay, you know, let's give them a few. It was a first effort.
All right. Well, we've got Eric and Montello, then Mike and Middleton coming up, and Phil and Sheboygan Falls. Eric and Montello, though, you are next. Hi.
Hey, this is my first haiku I've ever written, and I'm sure it'll be my last. What are you guys doing? Yeah, what are you guys doing? Isn't this garden faux pas? Next time, be prepared.
Isn't that what our students often say to us after class? Or when I think I've gotten the same comments on the teaching evaluations? Yeah, I think I've seen that before. You haven't taken any classes from us, have you?
No, but it's real easy to be critical.
Thanks, Eric. Mike in Middleton. Mike's got a question for you. Here, let's go there. Mike, hello.
Hello, how are you today?
Good.
First, thanks for your show. It's entertaining and informative. And I don't know if this is on the category, but I'm trying to scratch off my bucket list. I'm using a canning process for dill pickles. And the cucumbers I'm using are not cucumbers for pickles. They're, I guess, the garden salad variety. I want to know what my chances are that they'll work.
That's exactly what I do.
They don't have to win a blue ribbon, but I would be interested to know, am I wasting my time? But I don't mind doing it just for the heck of it. And then I have a quick joke. What did one potato say to the other potato?
I don't know. Let's see.
I only have eyes for you.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, thanks again for your time. You guys are awesome.
All right, thanks a lot. Okay, now what about these cucumbers? Just to rephrase, Mike in Middleton has cucumbers not meant for pickling.
He's got slicers rather than pickling cucumbers.
Yeah.
I make my pickles out of slicers as well. You know, the reason I do that is because I use the quart jars. And, you know, the pickling cucumbers tend to be sort of short and squat, and the slicers tend to be longer, and they fit better in my jars. The reason this is important is because I can remember when I was a graduate student, I was in North Carolina, and we went to visit. I was with my major professor, whom I regularly embarrassed, Irwin. I know you find that hard to believe, but we were at the National Pickle Meeting, and there was the head of one of the pickle companies. And tragically, I sat next to the man at the dinner table, right? And, of course, my major professor couldn't eat because he was so nervous. He's pretty much like Larry, hanging over that kill button, right? So I turned to and I said, at that time, the biggest thing that we had to deal with was we would go out to the field and we had to measure every cucumber and make sure that the length diameter ratio was 3-1. So I turned to the gentleman and I said, sir, could you please help me understand why the length diameter ratio of the cucumbers must be 3-1? And the man turned to me dryly and he said, son, he said, because that's the size of my jars. So let me say that I am completely sympathetic and I...
Do you have to do anything different?
I choose my... No. I don't do anything different, and I make my pickles right out of slicers.
I think that, you know, the pickling cucumbers may have smaller seeds. They have a slightly different skin to them, right?
They do. They do have a slightly different skin.
But there's no... I think Jim's point is a great one. There's no reason why you can't make excellent pickles out of slicers.
In fact, last night I made pickles out of green beans called the dilly bean.
That is fantastic.
And the reason they're made is because of the reason they're such a great pickling device, you know, the dill bean, is because it maintains that crunch. Mm-hmm. Often with pickles, you have to actually add, you know, aluminum or alum or, you know, they try to maintain that texture, which it's true. It's true that there might be a small but almost imperceptible difference, right, in terms of the crunchy enough of a pickle versus a slicer. But, you know, once they're pickled, I really can't detect it. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's just my, it could be that I do not have a refined palate, Irwin, but it's unlikely.
I think they can be made into excellent pickles, no question about that.
Because they're, basically, they're the size of my jar.
Phil in Sheboygan Falls. Hi.
Hi. I've got a question about cilantro. I picked up some cilantro at one of the box stores that just happened to be on sale and planted it and then sort of forgot about it and neglected it. Well, it started to flower, and I started to do some reading up on it, and so I plucked the flowers. But what I've got now is a very tall cilantro plant, and rather than the fuller leaves that you're accustomed to seeing, I've got a lot of spindly leaves on the top, and the ones on the bottom sort of look like they're dying back.
No problem. This is really the cilantro is a photoperiod sensitive plant, and of course, as you move into long days, right, it will flower and not create the beautiful cilantro that you had in the springtime. Cilantro can only be grown for about an hour and a half from 11:30 to 12, right, on Mondays in May 15th. And then the other season for cilantro is in the fall. So actually it'll reseed itself, right? What happens to me is I let it flower. It basically reseeds itself. Mm-hmm. It comes back in the fall. Mm-hmm. And I have cilantro in the fall, but it's a photoperiod sensitive plant.
Can you get coriander seeds off of that and use those?
Sure. Oh yeah. Yeah.
So one of the saving graces of your situation is that you could harvest some of those seeds, which of course are coriander, and maybe use that as an herb.
Huh.
So the seeds are in the flower itself. Then?
That's correct. Oh, yeah. Well, the flowers will form fruits, and then inside those fruits will be little coriander seeds. And actually, so cilantro and coriander are the same. They're basically the same plant, coriander being the foliage and coriander the seed.
Okay. And then I had a quick question about pepper plants.
Yeah.
I've had mixed success growing bell peppers, and I grow a lot of different kinds of peppers. But this year I had some kind of a brownish dry rot show up, not like a blossom rot, but more like a dry rot. And, of course, I looked on the Internet, and I'm seeing, well, it could be due to two things, too much water or not enough. So that sort of leaves me in a quandary. I'm wondering...
haven't you actually defined our growing season this year? It's either been too much water or not enough, right?
Yeah,
So I think that probably... I'm not experienced a great deal of blossom end rot in our peppers, but I would, I tell you what, send me an email or send one to Larry, and because I tell you, this year we're having really good luck with those poblano peppers that we've developed, right?
Oh,
that are better
adapted
to. Did you get the seed from me?
No.
Well, you got to get seed from me. You got to email me and get some seed, because we'll be happy to provide that to you, and you can test those. What we did with, I also love, I love roasting peppers, because I, like, one of my fascination, as soon as the squash blossom season kind of fades, I go into my chile relleno stage. In fact, this afternoon, I'm going to move vigorously into the chile relleno stage of the summer, and I'm going to make the chile rellenos. And, of course, one of the problems is that some of the peppers that you use, which are the poblano, right, or the anchos, they tend to be late in maturity. So what we did was we tried to develop one that was earlier maturing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm going to have some out at the at our trial garden, Erwin. I'm going to go out there and try some.
Fantastic.
Oh,
yeah,
that's wonderful. Phil, thank you. Appreciate
it. And just want to tell you one other thing. It's not been a terrible year for everything. I have a prairie that's just done fantastic this year.
Yeah. Prairies do really well. They'll outperform almost anything else in too dry conditions, for sure.
There's an issue, though, with actually making a good prairie dish.
Yeah.
Because there's the thistles. You know, I mean, if you're a cow, you're probably pretty excited by the culinary, adventure that might be in front of you. But I rarely go past the prairie, and say to myself, wow.
Something.
Let me get my bag out,
Erwin Goldman and Jim Nguyen, who is our Vicars of Vegetables, UW-Madison Horticulture professors, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with the Vicars of Vegetables today, really looking forward to hearing what you have to say. You have a question for them? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. And you can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And you can post a haiku or question or a comment there. We have a haiku from Janice in Rock Falls who says, Vicars of Veggies, grilled peppers, tomato squash. Enjoy your compost.
Yeah.
Just for you. Just for you.
That was sweet. Thank you.
And Daniel, he calls it, oh no, I read that one already. Let's see, I've got to find a different one here. Oh, here's an email from Jerry in Milwaukee. I planted some butternut squash from seeds. I'm getting acorn squash on some of the vines. What do you think happened? So some of the vines are acorn squash. Mm-hmm. Could be a couple different things.
This is called the seed mixture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way that's gonna happen without.
No.
I mean, they were planted, or they, you know, they were left over from a year before.
Yeah.
In fact, let's see, butternut. Butternut happens to be a different species. It's Machata, and the acorn is Cucurbita pepo. So, in fact, they won't. You know, with some difficulty, it'd be difficulty for them to cross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's. Either the seed mixture was mixed up or there were some holdovers from the year before.
That's correct, yeah. Sir.
Marianne LaCrosse, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Well, first of all, I thought I was going to have a challenging question for the Vickers because when I told the screener my question, she said, and it's about pineapple sage, and she said, well, I don't know if they can answer that question or not because it's an herb and they're vegetable guys, and I don't know what family genus or species pineapple sage is, but here's my question. For years I planted herbs just for my grandchildren for the texture and the odor, and this year all I have is pineapple sage, and if you have a long enough growing season, it has such a beautiful red flower at the tip, but you really need a long growing season. However, that isn't my question. This year my leaves have no pineapple scent at all. And in years past, they've had the wonderful pineapple scent. And I know it just isn't my smeller because I've had other people crush the leaves and smell too. So I wonder if you have any explanation why my pineapple sage doesn't smell like pineapple.
What does it smell like?
It just doesn't really have any fragrance at all.
No fragrance at all. Okay.
Just like a crushed leaf.
All right.
Do you think it may be just a concentration issue, Irwin? That maybe the growing season has been so, you know, say, you know, a lot of these vegetables are adapted to sort of the, you know, the cool kind of wet weather that we've been having this fall. And I wonder if it might not be simply a fact that it's there, but so
diluted.
Yeah, it's so diluted.
Diluted out. It could very well be. I mean, this is a plant that's native to the tropics. I don't know much about it, but I would guess that it's in the, I think it's a mint. I think it's in the mint family, and I would suppose that just too much water or the kind of growing conditions we had could simply dilute that out.
Yeah, because certainly it's going to be a lot easier to grow that than the actual pineapple itself in Wisconsin. So,
that's true.
So I think you have made a good choice.
Yeah.
But
very interesting.
But the screener was absolutely right. We have no idea.
Yeah,
we can't answer the question.
Not a vegetable.
She pretty much nailed it. You know, mm-hmm. These guys are so narrowly focused that they can't go beyond, you know, anything that isn't a vegetable. That's correct.
Okay. Thanks, Mary. Susie in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hello. Say about that cilantro and coriander issue.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they will sell the seeds as one or the other, what you want to look for is the one that's labeled slow to bolt. Mm-hmm. I believe that genetically there is a difference. And I learned that many years ago mm-hmm. from my neighboring Puerto Rican fellow gardeners that their cilantro was all leafy and beautiful, and mine was all feathery and starting to go to seed.
Mm-hmm. Good point. So for growing the leaf crop, you really want ones that have been selected against bolting or have some bolting resistance.
Which, you know, which is exactly what they do with other photoperiod sensitive plants. Like the same thing happens with another crop that does this is spinach.
Yeah.
And there's slow bolting spinach is called, it's called long-standing Bloomsdale, right? And this is exactly what it's selected for.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that's really interesting, I don't want to dive off on another topic area, but it's really interesting. You mentioned your Puerto Rican neighbors, you know, and the fact that, and my wife is the same way. She's, she's Costa Rican, and she has to have her cilantro in everything. And yet, you know that cilantro is not native to the Americas.
Right. That is the fascinating thing.
That's what, I mean, and yet, if you are Latin today, you must have your cilantro. What's what's fascinating to me is that there's a crop that is in a completely different family, and I can't remember the name of that family.
Are you talking about culantro?
Culantro. Is that an apiaceae?
I think it is.
But it's not called cilantro. It's called culantro, C-U-L-A-N-T-R-O. And this grows in sort of high-altitude air regions of Central America. I've certainly seen it.
And it is apiaceae.
It might be an apiaceae. Yeah, I thought it might
same
be
same family. That's the same family as carrot and dill and many of those.
And the amazing thing about mm-hmm. it is that its aromatic profile, I mean, at least to my slightly indistinguished nose, right, it smells the same, right? Mm-hmm. So my mm-hmm. wife will, when she's in Central America, she will use culantro. Mm-hmm. Right, but when she's here, we don't have culantro available, right? No one grows it here, but they grow cilantro, and cilantro, which is a European import, is now sort of taken over. I don't know.
Fascinating.
These are the things that Irwin and I, you know, when we're not napping in our offices, you know, these are the fascinating things that we think about in our offices.
Well, it is amazing that it's used so deeply in the cuisines of Asia and parts of Europe, and then also in Latin America.
Yeah, because, I mean, I bring this up only again because I remember I was in we went to a Mexican restaurant, right? And they had labeled the salsa. They said, just the way Montezuma would have enjoyed it. And then they listed the ingredients, right? And they listed cilantro, onions, right? And I thought,
none of those things would have been available.
None of those would have been available to Montezuma. And then they listed the tomato, which is also, ironically, a secondary vegetable, right, to the Aztec and Mayan culture. The tomato was, in fact, the tomato was, it's the tomatillo that was really, because even in Madison, Wisconsin, if you go into one of those, one of the Mexican supermarkets here and you ask for a tomate, right, they're going to hand you a tomatillo. You have to say jitomate if you want the red like a persican kind of tomato. It's a completely different name. Mm-hmm. So I would question whether Montezuma would have had red ripe tomatoes. I think he made his salsa. I think he made his salsa out of chocolate and peppers. That's what I think Montezuma ate.
Thank you again, Susie, for calling. Appreciate it.
Did we answer her question, or did we just dive off into
another area? Well, she made a great comment, and I think we expanded on it.
Okay, we just expanded on it. Okay. Yeah.
Jim in Bayfield says, this is about zucchini flowers, which we were talking about earlier, how to tell the females from the males. You look at the base of the flower. The female flowers will have a baby zucchini at the base, and that will grow if pollinated and shrivel if not. But the male flowers have a thin stem at the base of the flower. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good
He did that so much more elegantly because I would have had some sort of X-rated response to that. So thank you for making that so elegantly done.
Mary in Madison, hello.
Hello. Yes, I had a question about vitamins in fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
I had heard that clean the skin, have organic, and don't peel. Because you'll have most of the vitamins are in the skin, and I was wondering whether that was true or false.
I think Irwin's eyes have lit up here. So Irwin, help her with this.
Well, it is true. It is true about the skins. The skin has often a lot of nutrients are located either in the skin or just underneath the skin. So if you do peel your vegetables, you need to realize that you will be throwing some of that away.
Yeah.
So I certainly recommend, if you're interested in the nutritional aspects, that you consider eating the skin. And roasting vegetables or baking them is one way to make that skin very, very palatable. But there are a number of vegetables, carrots, sweet potatoes, where not only is the skin nutritious, but the vegetable itself has a lot of nutrients, a lot of beta-carotene. So it's not fair to say that you'd lose all the nutrients because those vegetables have very rich nutrient composition all the way through.
Yeah, beets would be another one, wouldn't
it? Beets is another one. So it does depend a little bit on the vegetable, but generally speaking, you're right. High nutrient composition near and around the skin.
And isn't that particularly true of something like potatoes?
Yeah, absolutely. You'll find a lot of vitamins in the skin. So if you can bake it, If you can oven roast it, you'll end up being able to obtain some of that.
Is there anything in the skin of the eggplant, Erwin, that is even worth? Is there any nutritional?
Isn't it
simply leather?
You know,
really?
The eggplant isn't my favorite. I'll admit that, but I do have to admit that it contains high levels of anthocyanin pigment, to the extent that the anthocyanin, the purple pigment, is
can't even degrade. You can't even degrade it. It's like, Erwin, it's like leather, really.
It is. And to the extent that that has nutritional value, you are getting some of that. But I'm kind of with you on the eggplant. I'm a little nervous about it.
And I also noticed that she asked a question. She said, boy, should are my organic vegetables more nutritious? Do you have any thoughts about that?
You know, that's such an interesting question, and there's so much discussion of that these days. There is not a significant body of evidence right now that shows higher nutritional value with organic production. There's some individual papers here and there that show for particular crops, particular nutrients, differences between organic and conventional. But if you had to ask me, I'd say across the board, there isn't hard evidence that suggests that there are big differences right now.
And with that, we are approaching a deadline here, and we'll meet it. Our guests today, Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman, the Vickers of Vegetables. They are UW-Madison-based horticulture professors who come by every so often to talk with us about what's going on in the garden and also to offer some haikus and to get some haikus from you. And it's always, always fun and interesting to have Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman here with us on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lucky to have a whole roster of Garden Talk guests who are really experts in their field, and Erwin Goldman and Jim Nienhuis are no exception. They are hort professors at UW-Madison. We call them the Vickers of Vegetables, and besides what they know about all kinds of garden plants and growing conditions, they also love garden poetry as well. Erwin, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Larry.
And Jim Nienhuis, thank you so much. Appreciate it very much.
Pleasure to be here, sir.
We have we've been reading haikus. And poems. We've been taking questions about fruits and vegetables, mostly vegetables. And you may have a question, or maybe you have a limerick, or maybe you have a haiku about something in your garden. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. My wife had said, why don't you ask for haikus about small space gardening? And here is one from someone. New raised bed this year. I've created a monster. All planted too close. You know, that sounds like it could have been Judith, because she created a raised bed this year.
No, it's you know, the reason I'm laughing at that one is because the a lot of sort of novice gardeners, you know, who out at Eagle Heights, you'll notice that they'll plant their tomato plants about 6 inches apart, and they always walk past my garden in the spring, you know, like shaking their heads because my rows are, you know, 3 or 4 feet apart, right? And they're like, oh, that's so, you're so wasteful. You know, you're not efficient, right? You must be a professor, right? And, but now is my moment to laugh because the rows are filled in and I can barely walk down those rows. And of course, they're over there with their 6 inch apart tomatoes and there's no way that they can even harvest them.
Yeah. Buzz in Fond du Lac has something for us. Hi, Buzz.
Hi, I've been hearing all these vegetable haikus. I thought it was time for a limerick. That's
oh, cool.
Perfect, right?
All right, let's hear it.
There are two Vickers that you know. They say peppers are things we do know. Jalapenos are just fine. Poblanos are divine. But habaneros es numero uno.
Ooh. Whoa. Hey, did you email that in, Buzz? Because we want to keep that. That's pretty good.
I didn't, and my computer's on the fritz, so I'll have to send it later.
Well, send it later, though. Please do.
Oh, please do, because that's pretty cool. Thank you.
Like
a limerick
right,
about the Vickers, and he nailed it.
I like that one a lot. There was a poem as well, excuse me, from Oh, this one was from Amy. It's called A Mother's Love. Ripe, sweet, and dark blackberries stifle generosity. We used to eat them stealthily, my husband and I, in the sparse early days of summer, proffering palmfuls like treasures only once the branches were heavy with fruit. This year, for the first time, my son's tiny hands reach out for the luscious taste of summer. I see the sparkle in his eye, and I must be extra quick to pluck them and eat them before he does.
That's beautiful. Fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much for that. That's a great.
A lot of truth in that one.
Here's from a haiku from Matthew in Warren, Illinois. He explains, every year I plant 20 to 50 trees in the spring. This year I had to do it by myself. So he had to plant all those trees by himself. Here's his haiku. Planting trees, a hawk soars overhead. My back is sore.
Oh, boy. Been there.
Amen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is...
That is so true.
That is very descriptive, and is everybody would have just a knowing nod. Lynn in Eau Claire has something for us. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Larry and the Vickers.
Yeah.
I have to preface with, I tried to plant a specific way because of arthritis, and the Jack mentioned in my haiku is my five-year-old grandson who digs holes.
Okay.
So here we go. Tried straw bale garden. Stepped in Jack hole. Broke my foot. Better luck next year.
Ooh. And painfully, I did capture the mental image of that.
Yeah. He was like, oh, that'll leave a mark.
Oh, yeah. So no straw bale for you, huh?
Yeah, they were, and they're fantastic.
Oh, you did plant them. Okay, because I've got one. I experimented with one straw bale, and I've got tomatoes on the top and then some other things growing out the side of the straw bale. And actually, it's doing very well. But, of course, it was supplemented with a fair amount of commercial fertilizer that went in, mm-hmm. along with a lot of water. Yeah. But it's been fun.
Mm-hmm. But didn't you also suggest at one time that weren't there these bags that you grow upside down?
Oh, sure, sure. Right. The
Larry was quite an advocate for that. And I don't remember us actually ridiculing that product. But
are you still growing the topsy turvy?
I did not grow it this year, but I have grown it pretty much every other year, and I always get good tomatoes.
It works well. Yeah. It works well. Yeah.
But for some reason, listeners, he gave up on it this year. Now, why could that be? And he went to the straw bale with excessive amounts of fertilizer. You know, it's basically aeroponics, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is what he's done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And Lynn, thanks again. Appreciate the call. Here's a poem from Susan in Milwaukee. And she says she loves the show and you guys. Here's hers. Rabbits in the lettuce patch. Raccoons in the corn. Chipmunks in the tomato plants. Cabbage moths in the morn.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. There's a second,
second
part. Birds in the berry patch. I'm tired of this bowl. My salad bowl is empty, but my big stew pot is full.
Oh, well done. That's terrific. Thank you, Susan.
That's terrific. I almost ruined it by not giving the last verse.
No, it was terrific. Even the first verse was terrific, but the mental image captured by the second verse, right, really twisted that poem right on the sort of poetic apex there, didn't it, Irwin?
It did.
Here's one that we may or may not... Well, this is a haiku from Jack on Facebook. It's also his first haiku. Larry Moe Curley. Larry and Jim and Irwin. What's the difference?
Well, basically good looks. And this is Jim speaking. So I think that really, that's the only difference. And that's really the beauty of radio. that we'll never be able to actually validate that.
Faces made for radio, right?
Yeah, I have the face made for radio, yeah.
We have a question from Diane about her zombie tomatoes. I have raised a raised bed with six tomato plants.
Zombie variety?
One wilted suddenly a couple of weeks ago, and then it revived. Eventually, five of the six plants have wilted, and the crazy thing is they all wilt and revive and wilt and revive. I haven't yanked them out yet because they have some fruit that's ripening, and they keep, you know, perking up repeatedly. I suspect the huge black walnut tree in the neighbor's yard now. I thought I planted my tomatoes far enough away, but research is saying no.
Okay, I have a solution to this problem, and it is Jim, the grafting machine.
Yeah, it is. For next year.
For next year, what you do is, I had this problem, and the walnut tree finally grew up, right, in my railroad garden. And so what I found was that the... You know, it's no surprise to me to find that the most pathetic vegetable was the only one that actually survived.
The eggplant.
Was the eggplant.
Yeah.
In fact, the only use for that pathetic vegetable is as a rootstock for growing tomatoes. Mm-hmm. So here's what I did. What I did was I actually grafted the tomatoes onto the eggplant, right? And they could grow in the soil, which is filled with the juglones
from the black walnut.
And they could grow, and I was able to produce tomatoes. Now, I haven't validated this research or published it. It's just basically stuff that I make up.
Yeah. Well, I think what's happening is the walnut wilt, right?
Yeah, sure.
And that's what's causing the wilt. So if you want to be adventurous next year and try Jim's grafting technique, it might allow you to grow them in that same space.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, Judith has that problem because the neighbor's got a black walnut. Mm-hmm. She put in raised beds, and then she put pavers as the base, so the roots couldn't come up from underneath.
Good way to do it.
And or you can just, make a tragic error with that walnut tree and say, oh, I called the tree service. Did they cut down your? Oh, my God. You know, I mean, you could play that.
But even then, it'd be years and years.
It takes a while.
Yeah.
It takes a while.
Because that stays in the soil.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mona in New Berlin. Hi.
Hi. Well, thanks for taking my call. I'm going to change the subject on you. I have tomato questions and no haiku. I'm sorry, I'm not that.
Oh, that's all right.
Poetic.
That's all right.
Mona, anyway, you sound poetic just as you speak.
Oh well, let me tell you first what my problem or questions are. Actually, I have two questions. One is I have planted a variety of heirloom tomatoes. I did that last year, and I saved some of the seeds, and I planted some more this year, and I'm wondering, what is the chance of having cross-pollination and getting a true vegetable? Because they're all planted kind of close together.
Are you asking about cross-pollination among your plants?
Yes. Among my tomatoes, I planted black crimson, Italians, and old German, and Mr. Stripey. Those are the ones I did last year. Now, this year, I didn't do quite as many variety.
But aren't those
They're largely self-pollinated.
Yeah. In fact, most of the modern cultivars have all, the stigmat in the wild cultivars, you'll find that the actual stigma extrudes beyond the corolla, so you can have cross-pollination. There's not, I've never seen a modern, by modern, I mean within the last, 500 years, cultivar develop in which what they've done is they've sort of shrunk down the stigma, so they're also pollinated. I say this because I do have to keep a lot of our seed from the, we do a lot of breeding trials, and I have to keep the seed from those. I do that both in tomatoes and peppers. I grow, peppers that are completely different colors. I have reds, yellow, greens out there, and people say to me, well, heavens, don't you end up with seed mixtures? And I do not. And that's because we don't have the, even if we had an extruded stigma, and of course you do in peppers as opposed to tomatoes, the pollinators aren't there, there's specific types of, bees and leafcutter bees that are actually used for pollinating those, and apparently their populations are so low that I have not experienced that. That even in peppers. In tomatoes, there's not going to be a problem unless you happen to have such an ancient heirloom. you know, that it would have an extruded stigma, and now, I have not seen it.
Now, perhaps you were perhaps you were interested in seeing a cross made, and you could certainly do that yourself. You'd have to open up those flowers and transfer pollen. You could certainly do that, but it's not likely to happen.
Sure, I'll get right in there. No, I'm very happy with the ones that I got.
Okay.
I just want to make sure they stay the same.
They'll breed true then.
Yeah. Okay. My second question has to do with, you know, we got a little cool spell, and my tomatoes are not getting ripe as fast as I'd like them to.
Mm-hmm.
So I started pruning back some of the leaves and some of the new growth on the plants. Is that an old wives' tale, or will that help?
Wow, I'm not an advocate of tomato pruning at all, because, you know, I sort of think about it as, you know, the factory and the product kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, why would I cut back on the photosynthetic area if I want to produce more widgets?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Or am I just too industrial in patterns here? So I'm not a big advocate of that at all. I think really you nailed it. This has been a cool season, and we have a lot of bacterial spec out there. We probably have other early blight, etc., that have been hitting the tomatoes. I'm sure that. You know, they're not developing as rapidly. The peppers are not developing. The tomatoes are not. This has been a year for cool season vegetables. People who foolishly planted broccoli in the springtime, which usually I think, why bother, right? Those people are laughing at me right now, right?
Yeah, because they've got great.
Onions, broccoli, anything that's a cool season vegetable is doing spectacularly well, and it's all the warm season vegetables. It's the tomatoes. Even my squash are not developing. They're beautiful, but they're not developing very quickly. And the tomatoes have been hit hard by bacterial diseases and fungal diseases. And I bet a lot of commercial people are applying a lot of sprays.
Yeah, this is the first year I've not had a problem with it yet, knock on wood.
So. Here's a trick somebody suggested. Take your tomato plant, or try it, you might try it on one plant, and pull on the plant to start to uproot it, but don't uproot it a little bit.
I'm sorry, what?
You pull on the plant to start to uproot it, but you don't completely uproot. You just pull it a little bit, and what you're doing is... This person says what you're doing is you're putting stress on the plant, and that will cause the plant to want to ripen more quickly.
Yeah, I think this is a bit of a stretch here, Larry. I just have to say, I think threatening the plants is not an appropriate way to increase yield at all. I would suggest that if you want your tomatoes to produce tomato, I would play a little rock music, a little AC/DC. If you put the actual speaker out there, I've noticed, you know, that they will. They aren't actually threatened by the music, but it's so abrasive that they would do anything to escape it. And the plants will respond by producing fruit earlier. Yeah, it's really the corollary to Larry's suggestion.
Yes.
Threatening your tomatoes. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Well, you know, if you have a lot of tomato plants, you might try it on one just to see what happens.
Do you think that walking out there with the machete and just sort of waving it near them saying, either produce or else? Do you think that would work?
It's sort of like the trick that the fruit apple growers will use sometimes. They will cut into the trunk of their tree to get the tree to produce fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So they put it under some stress.
A little stress, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, hastens it.
For sure. Or somebody else said they hit it with a baseball bat.
I don't see it as stressful. I see it as threatening.
It is, yeah. Well, you're sensitive. I think you have a more sensitive...
Could you guys, by the way, Peter wondered if you could suggest a couple of vegetables to plant now for fall harvest.
Let's see. Wow. Yes, August. If you could get the seedlings, I would still go with cucurbits for the... Not cucurbits. What am I talking about? Cole crops. I would go for broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower for the fall.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could still... I usually put them in...
How about a little spinach?
Spinach would be cilantro?
Yeah, a little later you can go with spinach. It still may be a little too warm, but
I would go with the cool season crops, because they very often you know, you think, oh, the cool season crops should do so well in the spring and they should do so well in the fall. But, you know, again, as I indicated, I wasn't just being facetious. You know, our spring cool season is about an hour and a half. And but the fall season is spectacular.
It is.
Plus, there are fewer bugs.
Right.
And I really enjoy gardening with fewer bugs.
I plant beets as late as early August. And you can get a nice crop of baby
cool
beets
season,
too.
A cool season vegetables.
That's right. So
I would go with a lot of cool season vegetables. I would try that. Baby carrots, I bet you could go with.
Yep.
Yeah. Radishes.
Yep. Radish,
all of those things. Yep. Yeah. And a lot of the things that are food period sensitive that we already talked about, like cilantro and spinach, boy, go in the fall. Spectacular.
I agree.
Thanks again, by the way, for that. And I want to go to a here we go. A Facebook question from Ruth, who's growing sweet corn for the first time. She says, I hear raccoons love sweet corn. Anything I can do, maybe make hot pepper sauce on the silks, or do raccoons like things hot? Well, they would not like things hot.
Mm-hmm. No, I can't. Don't we have some laws now that you can actually pack in this state? I would say the 22 to the 45 is the effective procedure to use against the raccoon.
I'm telling you, they will. I remember some of your colleagues who were growing plots at one of the experimental farms. I forget which one, but the raccoons. It was such a battle.
Mm-hmm.
They did have some luck with electric fence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Electric fence. Which you can, there's a sort of solar operated batteries that you can have, and you can set up a couple of strand electric fence.
You know, I'm so grateful that there isn't a haiku about this, because the raccoon, sweet corn, what would we include in that haiku? Electric fence, firearms. Is this compatible with the show in any way, Irwin? Isn't the show kind of nosedive?
It's a little harsh.
It's a little harsh.
Yeah, I hear you.
Well, here we've got from a short poem from Judy.
Hope it's uplifting after the...
Last year saved leaves. This year, garden has no weeds. And I used to have a great big garden, and I would collect leaves, and my whole garden would be mulched with about a foot thick pile of leaves.
Oh man, I am so sympathetic with that, because I am like Mr. Mulch King.
Mm-hmm.
This is because we get all the leaves from Shorewood delivered over to Eagle Heights, you know, by the it's like Mount Wisconsin, over there. And of course, the problem is it'll tie up all your nitrogen. So,
you got to fertilize,
you have to fertilize a lot. Yeah. Or else it will. Because remember, you know, the mulch is decomposing, which means that there are little critters there. And those little critters do come from planet Earth, and they have amino acids and proteins, which are all nitrogen-based, right? They will tie up the little critters to composing that mulch are going to tie up all your nitrogen during their growth and reproduction. So you got to cut it. You got to fertilize like heck.
And with that, we're done. I hope you guys, it was a lot of fun today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us, Larry.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman are vicars of vegetables, horticulture professors at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and it was fun. We'll have them back. Obviously, we'll do it again. Monday, Judith's going to be talking about the amazing world of carnivorous plants, and she also has the author of a new book on the Lindbergh kidnapping case. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.